Part 1, Chapter 21, File 2, Question number 2, discuss the causes, events and the results of the civil war in England from 1642 to 1649. Answer: Carrington and Jackson observed about the civil war. The English Civil War was not a class war. Both armies were led by the gentry, and in most villages the peasants seem to have sided with the squires. The Civil War in England can be divided into two parts. First, Civil War from 1642 to 1646. And the Second Civil War from 1646 to 1649. Now the First Civil War, 1642 to 1646. The Civil War which broke out in England from 1642 to 1646 had a great significance in the history of England. As a consequence of the Civil War, not only was the absolutism and despotism of the king abolished, but the theory of the divine right of kings itself was put on stake. The Civil War also made it clear that the people were not puppets in the hands of the king, and if the king violated their rights on his own whims, they had also the option to raise their voice against him. It might be meaningless in the modern context, but the position of the king in the 17th century had its own significance. A spirit of opposition surged through the hearts of the people due to stern and tyrannical reign of James I, and the shortcomings of Charles I strengthened this feeling. In short, the following factors were responsible for the outbreak of civil war in England. First, James I was an absolute despot. He had firm faith in the theory of divine right. His mistakes and shortcomings made the civil war inevitable in England. Second, conflict with Parliament was inherited by Charles I from his father James I, which he widened by his own faults. Had he acted wisely and had farsightedness, he would have overpowered it, but he complicated matters due to his greedy ways and autocratic policy. His 11 years personal reign was a living example of his sternness and tyranny, for which people began to oppose him. Third, the economic policy of Charles I was also a root cause of the outbreak of civil war. He was badly in need of money due to war between France and Spain. The Parliament was not granting money to him according to his needs. Hence, the king resorted to unconstitutional measures to meet his demands. He fined the culprits heavily, imposed several undue taxes, and granted leases to the merchants after taking bribes. This policy of amassing wealth through illegitimate means annoyed the Parliament and made the outbreak of war inevitable. Fourth, after the murder of Buckingham, the minister of the king, two other ministers, Wentworth and Laud, attained importance, but the people began to hate them due to their atrocities and tyrannical policies. They tormented and repressed the people according to their whims during the 11 years of the personal reign of Charles I. It annoyed the public and they wanted to get rid of them. Wentworth was executed due to the opposition of people and Lord was also imprisoned. The king felt great concern with the act of the parliament and wanted to avenge the death of Wentworth. Now, fifth, financial problems and religious intolerance were two chief reasons of conflict between the king and the parliament. The queen of Charles I was a follower of Catholic religion. Therefore, the king wanted to grant concessions to the Catholics. But the people were against this policy of the king. The Puritans were in majority in the parliament, but the king was against the reforms desired by the Puritans. England had to wage a war against Scotland due to narrow religious policy. Sixth, the civil war was also caused by social reasons. The leadership of the parliament was in the hands of farmers and merchants, while the supporters of the country consisted of landlords and big traders who were always lost in comforts and luxuries. By 1590, there were a uniformity between the selfish ends of the king and the nobles, but in the reign of Charles I, a tension grew and it became difficult to maintain cordial relations. The nobles began to consider the king a stumbling block in their smooth life. The king was in favor of monarchy, but the parliament was against the theory of divine right of Stuart rulers. This social difference created an environment of civil war in England. Charles I of England summoned Long Parliament in 1604 to meet his financial demands. The parliament tried to control the powers of the king from the date of its inception, and Charles I had to sign on the proposal passed by the parliament, for he did not want to annoy the parliament unnecessarily. It tried to crush mercilessly the honor and respect of the king through grand remonstrance. It divided the parliament into two parts. The opponents of the king passed the grand remonstrance by the majority of 11 votes and thus insulted the king. Seeing the opposite attitude of the parliament, Charles I endeavored to imprison the chief leaders of the parliament. He wanted to frame charges of treason and punish them, but they saved their life by fleeing the parliament. This activity of Charles I brought bad name to him, and it also terrified the members of the parliament that they could be imprisoned by the king at any time. Consequently, the king and the parliament both began to take measures for ensuring their own safety. The parliament tried to establish its control over the army by the Military Act, but the king did not agree to sign on it and transferred his residence from London to Nottingham. Now, nature of civil war. The civil war of England was not a class war. Armies of both the parties were led by the gentry. The supporters and opponents of the king were present in the parliament as well as in the House of Commons. And from the geographical point of view, a line drawn from Humber to Southampton equally divided the regions of both the parties. Through this civil war, it was also to be decided from the political point of view as to who, the king or the parliament, was more powerful, and also from religious point of view, which of the two, the Anglican or the Puritan church, would succeed. The religious phase of this civil war influenced Scotland and Ireland also, as they were struggling against the supremacy of Protestantism and trying for the establishment of the Presbyterian sect. The social aspect of this conflict is also very significant. The small merchants were also in favor of the Parliament along with the big traders, because they did not want to encourage monarchy by increasing the power of the king. It would have harmed the commercial interests. Therefore, they supported the Parliament in order to develop their trade and industry. There was a sharp controversy in England regarding civil war. The high officials of the church, bishops, cardinals, etc., were in favor of the king, but Puritans supported the Parliament. Similarly, landlords were the supporters of the king, whereas farmers favored the Parliament. The cities developed from the point of view of trade and commerce were influenced by the Parliament, and there was no dearth of people who were equally doubtful of the king and the Parliament. Both the parties were eager to enhance their military power, but they did not succeed in this regard as their integrity was doubtful. Charles I, the King of England, did not have trained soldiers. His army was weak. All the wars waged up to 1645 in England were fought by the landlords and their sons along with the semi-trained soldiers of the provinces. The exact commercial nature was imparted to the army by Cromwell. The greatest achievement of this civil war was that there happened to be no massacre like in the War of Roses, nor were people given death punishment on a large scale. Now, events of civil war. Actually, England had to face the flames of civil war twice in the reign of Charles I. In the beginning of the First Civil War, the king achieved success, but later on he was defeated. The king, after establishing his sway over London, wanted to end the war, but the Parliament did not let the king proceed to London or Essex. The commander of the parliamentary army wanted to create hurdles, but the king anyhow reached Edge Hill successfully. Now, Battle of Edge Hill, EDGEHILL. The first battle was fought at Edge Hill between the army of the king and the forces of the Parliament in 1642, in which the king succeeded. Prince Rupert played a prominent role in this battle, but the king committed a blunder that he did not go to London directly and stopped on his way. Now, Battle of Charlegrove, CHARLGROVE. Both the king and the Parliament reorganized their armies before the outbreak of this battle in 1643. Charles I planned to attack London from three sides, but he did not succeed in his goal. Hampden was killed at the battlefield. It shattered the power of the Parliament, and his soldiers took to their heels. Now, Battle of Newbury. When the armies of the king and the Parliament were advancing towards London, they fought a fierce battle at Newbury. Falkland, the famous commander of the king, was killed in this battle, and Charles had to retreat to Oxford as Essex reached London along with his army. The leader of the Parliament, Pym, P-Y-M, concluded a treaty with Scotland, and he was assisted by Scotland with 21,000 soldiers. It increased the military power of the Parliament. The Treaty of Pym is very significant, as it enabled Charles I to conclude a treaty with the rebels of Ireland so that he could face the Parliament boldly. Now, Battle of Marston Moor. Charles ordered his nephew Rupert that after raising the siege of York, he should come back, but the Parliament blocked his way. Prince Rupert wanted to avoid the battle, but the army of the Parliament attacked him. He was defeated in the Battle of 1644 at Marston Moor, but could save his life anyhow. Cromwell showed his valor and ability in this battle and attained name and fame. Cromwell understood the weaknesses of the army of the Parliament and tried to get rid of them. He made proper arrangements for the training of the soldiers. He organized cavalry and appointed able persons as commanders in the army. He dismissed the incapable officers from the army. He also tried to conclude a pact with the king in order to strengthen the army of the church, but he did not succeed. Now, Battle of Naseby, N-A-S-E-B-Y. After reinforcement of their army, Cromwell and Fairfax made an invasion on Charles I and achieved success at Naseby. The king took refuge with the Scottish army for his safety, and the Parliament established its sway at all significant places by 1645. Southgate observes, the campaign of 1645 was decisive. Although fighting took place in various parts of the country, the one great battle of the year was fought at Naseby. Charles was utterly defeated and left even his baggage in his opponent's hands. The issue of war was decided. The king tried to march to Scotland, but a further defeat prevented this. The war was over. The king might fall into the hands of the Puritans any time. He anticipated capture by riding into the Scottish camp. Now, the Second Civil War, 1646 to 1649. Though the king was defeated in the Second Civil War and was imprisoned, he soon escaped from the prison due to differences between the army and the Parliament. The king also concluded a pact with the King of Scotland, by which it was decided that he would declare the Presbyterian Church to be state religion. And according to this pact, the army of Scotland invaded England, in 1648. Revolts broke out in Wales and south eastern part of England in support of Charles I. But this invasion of Scotland ended in failure. Many important figures of Scotland were against this invasion, and the army did not consist of trained and skilled soldiers. Therefore, when Fairfax crushed the southeastern revolt, Cromwell compelled Scotland to bow down before him in the Battle of Preston. Charles I endeavored to conclude a pact with the Parliament after the defeat of Preston, but Cromwell and his supporters reached the conclusion that it was useless to sign a pact with Charles I. Therefore, 41 Presbyterian members were imprisoned on December 6, 1648, and about 46 members were warned that they should never come to Parliament. This event is known as Pride's Purge, PRIDE'S PURGE, in the history of England. Now, death of Charles I. After the imprisonment of the Presbyterian members, Charles I was tried by the remaining present members. Charles I listened to the charges framed against him very calmly and faced the predecided death punishment boldly. On January 30, 1649, the death punishment was carried out before Whitehall. Southgate, a prominent historian, has remarked about it: "The Queen and the Prince of Wales were abroad and made such efforts as were possible to save the King's life. The Prince sent to the Parliament a sheet of paper containing only his signatures, so that on it could be written absolutely any terms on which his father's life might be spared, but nothing could move the iron resolution of the soldiers. The execution of the king proved very disastrous, and it influenced the country gravely. The king achieved martyrdom in the eyes of the people. In spite of his various shortcomings, the army, by executing the king, had lost all the sympathy of the common masses. The executors of the king were of the opinion that having killed the king, they had ended the monarchy, but in fact, their deeds immortalized the king. Ramsay Moore opines that the execution of the king made the situation go out of control, and General Cromwell could control the situation only for a short while. In his own words, "From the king's death, the tide of reaction, which had been rising since 1641, became irresistible. Even the greatness of Cromwell and the strength of the finest army England had ever known could only damn it for 11 years. Now, consequences of civil war. The following consequences of the civil war proved significant. First, Cromwell got Charles I executed in order to end monarchy in England. Second, the establishment of democratic rule in England was an important factor of the civil war. Third, the Puritans gained power and strength as a result of this civil war. Fourth, after executing the king, Cromwell tried to centralize all the powers in himself. Fifth, House of Lords was abolished. Sixth, a Council of State was formed to run the administration. Seventh, the execution of the king woke the people from their slumber, and a strong reaction set in favor of the monarchy. Eighth, the financial independence of the king came to a natural end. Ninth, the Parliament became very popular due to it. 10th, the cause of absolute and national monarchy was lost forever. Now, causes of the failures of Charles I are the success of the Parliament. Now, first, the main cause of the victory of Parliament was the ability of his commanders. Charles did not possess commanders like Cromwell, who engendered a new spirit of courage, enthusiasm, and action among the soldiers of the parliament. On the other hand, the soldiers of the king were neither trained nor disciplined. Therefore, the king's defeat was inevitable. Second, the autocratic personal reign of Charles I was also an important factor leading to his defeat. The people were fed up with the autocratic and oppressive policies of the king and wanted to get rid of them. Third, the parliament had the cooperation and support of the people. It was also being assisted by Scotland, which opened the way to its success. Fourth, the economic condition of the King Charles I was very deplorable, due to which he could not make proper arrangements of arms and ammunition for his soldiers, whereas the army of the parliament was well equipped. Hence, the defeat of the soldiers of Charles I became inevitable. Fifth, the unpopularity of Charles I was also a prominent cause of his defeat. Sixth, he did not have any efficient counselor. His best advisors, like Buckingham, Wentworth and Laud, had been dead. But the parliament was still being advised by intelligent Pym and able Cromwell. The new model army and roundhead soldiers strengthened its power and prestige. It led to the defeat of the king. Now, points to remember. The English Civil War was not a class war. Both the armies were led by the gentry, and in most of the villages, the peasants seem to have sided with the squires. Squires. Now, causes of civil war. First, James I's belief in the theory of divine right prepared a background for the outbreak of the civil war. Second, it was inherited by Charles I from his father. Three, Charles I's economic policy proved to be a root cause of the outbreak of the civil war. Fourth, the execution of Buckingham, Wentworth, and Laud made its outbreak inevitable. Fifth, financial problems and religious intolerance were also prominent reasons which contributed to the outbreak of the civil war. Sixth, social reasons such as inequality between nobles and the king also created tension between the two sections. Now, nature of civil war. First, it was not a class war. Second, gentry participated in it. Three, the religious supremacy was to be decided. Fourth, small merchants supported parliament, whereas the king had the support of the big merchants. Fifth, similarly, the king was supported by higher officers of the church, while parliament had the support of clergymen. Now, events of civil war. Twice England had to face the flames of civil war. In the beginning, the king achieved some success, but ultimately he had to bow down before the forces of the parliament. The following battles were fought between the armies of the two. First, Battle of Edge Hill. Second, Battle of Charlegrove. Third, Battle of Newbury. Fourth, Battle of Marston Moor. Fifth, Battle of Naseby. Now, the Second Civil War. In this war, the king was defeated and imprisoned. He tried to conclude a pact with Parliament, but failed. Now, death of Charles I. Death punishment awarded to the king was carried out on January 30, 1649. It annoyed the supporters of monarchy to a large extent. Now, consequences of civil war. First, the king was put to death. Second, democracy was established in England. Third, Puritans strengthened. Fourth, centralization of power by Cromwell. Five, House of Lords abolished. Sixth, Council of State was formed. Seventh, execution of king woke the people from slumber. Eighth, popularity of parliament strengthened. Ninth, monarchy was abolished. Now, causes of failure of Charles I. First, the ability of the commanders of the parliament. Second, autocratic rule of Charles I. Third, Scotland helped the parliament. Fourth, poor financial position of Charles I. Fifth, efficient army of the parliament. Sixth, lack of able counselors. Now, question 3. Discuss the constitutional importance of the reign of Charles II. Answer. Charles II was a man of cheerful nature and gay disposition. His court was the center of luxuries and merrymaking. He looked to be a man of carefree nature and fond of pleasures. But he was so concentrated in himself that he could never appreciate good qualities in others. He was shamelessly immoral, devoted to sensual pleasures, drinking and gambling. In spite of all the demerits, he had certain merits. He was fond of physical exercises, sports and hunting. He was also efficient in the work of administration. He wanted to become an absolute ruler, but never to be banished again. Southgate remarks, he was a fully determined, as his father and grandfather had been, to be an absolute monarch, but he cared nothing about the appearance of power so long as he had its substance. He did not wish to have conflict with the parliament. He had also realized that it was impossible for him to dispense with the parliament altogether. Therefore, it is said that he had neither a principle nor faith nor honor. He was an opportunist through and through. He was a follower of Catholic religion. But nobody could know this secret before his death. He continued to be regarded as a follower of Anglican Church. Ramsay Moore, therefore, writes that actually he had no faith in any religion. He was a clever man and succeeded in diverting the wrath of Parliament from himself to the ministers. Now, home policy of Charles II. He ascended the throne of England in 1660. Before his coronation, he assured the people of England that he would pay the salary to the army, excuse the persons responsible for his father's execution, grant religious freedom, and would not take back the lands granted to the people during the regime of Commonwealth. Before the enthronement of Charles II, Monk had invited a convention. So, in the beginning of Restoration, it was the responsibility of convention to take decisions on significant issues, according to which Charles II was invited to become the King of England. No doubt, Charles II had made declaration, but it was left to the will of convention to fulfill these promises. After his accession to the throne of England, the convention first of all tried to fulfill the promises made by Charles II in his declaration. First, the arrears were paid to the army. Second, new model army was abolished. Only a regiment of 5,000 soldiers was maintained. 3. An act of indemnity and oblivion was passed by which general pardon was granted to all except the 13 judges who ordered for the execution of Charles II, and 25 persons were granted life imprisonment. Now, 4. The confiscated estates of the king, the royalists, and the church were restored. 5. The royal revenue was fixed. 6. Renewal of the Navigation Act of 1651 was granted. The convention was dissolved in 1661. Now, the Cavalier Parliament. After a dissolution of the convention, a second parliament was invited, which came to be known as the Cavalier Parliament. This parliament worked from 1661 to 1679. As the Cavalier Parliament survived for 18 years, so it came to be known as Long Parliament of Restoration. Several ministers served during this parliament. This parliament was a greater supporter to monarchy than the king himself. Now, Clarendon Code. Edward Hyde was the first minister of Charles II. Title of the Earl of Clarendon was awarded to him, so he became popular by the name of Clarendon. He served for about 7 years and enjoyed the confidence of the king in every matter. He, therefore, was said to be a half-king. He was an efficient and industrious person. The chief problem of his period pertained to religion, as it was inherited by the Second Parliament from the Convention. 4 acts pertaining to religion were passed by the Parliament, which also came to be known as Clarendon Code. The following acts were against the Puritan sect. Corporation Act. It was passed in 1661, and according to this act, nobody could be the member of the corporation without being the follower of Anglican Church. Now, Act of Uniformity. The Act of Uniformity was passed in 1662. According to it, the prayer book was restored. Though many reforms were incorporated in it, it remained opposed to the ideals of Puritans. It was chiefly aimed at ousting the Puritans from the churches. Now, Conventicle Act. The Conventicle Act was passed in 1664. According to this act, not more than 5 persons who did not have faith in the English Church could hold meeting. People violating this act were imprisoned. If anybody violated this act thrice, he was exiled. Now, 5 Miles Act. According to it, 2,000 persons who did not express their faithfulness towards the king and the church were prohibited from coming within 5 miles of his old residence. All these acts are known as Clarendon Code, but it is not their proper nomenclature, because these acts were neither passed at the inspiration of Clarendon nor at the instance of the king. Charles II did not believe in religious repressions, but these acts were implemented severely. Consequently, Puritans became annoyed with him. Southgate has remarked about it: "The promise of liberty to tender conscience made in the Declaration of Breda was forgotten." These religious acts could not be popular in England, but neither Charles II was responsible for them, nor the Cavalier Parliament. The plague of 1665 and the incident of fire in London in 1666 made the situation grave, and Clarendon was held responsible for all these incidents. In 1666, Charles removed him from the post of minister. Later on, he was impeached by the Parliament and exiled. Now, cable ministers. After the downfall of Clarendon, Charles II, mostly himself, handled the affairs of the state, keeping his own counsel. During 1667 to 1673, 5 persons served him as ministers: Clifford Arlington, Buckingham, Ashley, Cooper, and Lauderdale. The cabinet cabal was named after joining the first letter of the name of each member who served as minister with him during this period. The first two of them were Catholics, the third one was a friend of Charles II, the fourth was the ablest and most liberal from religious point of view, and the fifth was the governor and officer of Scotland. Charles could take advice from them jointly or separately, and dismiss any of them at his own sweet will. Now, Declaration of Indulgence. During the period of cabal ministry, Triple Alliance, Secret Treaty of Dover, and Third Dutch War took place. According to the Treaty of Dover, Charles promised to Louis XIV of France that he would grant concession to the Catholics, and therefore in 1672 he made the Declaration of Indulgence, by which the arbitrary punishments against Catholics and other religious sects were banned, and religious freedom was granted to all, but Charles had to take it back owing to the opposition of the Parliament. Now, Test Act. Withdrawal of the declaration created suspicion in the minds of the members of the Parliament. Hence, it passed the Test Act in 1673. According to it, every officer of England was required to take an oath to follow the religious principles of English Church. Charles accepted it. Clifford and Arlington had to forego their ministerial positions due to this act, and the Duke of York, James II, was relieved from the Navy. Now, Danby's ministry. Danby served as minister from 1673 to 78. He was against the policy of religious tolerance in foreign sphere. His policy was contrary to the policy of Charles II. He wanted to establish friendship with Holland in place of France, and he concluded a treaty with the King of Holland in 1674 and married the daughter of James I with William of Orange, the King of Holland. Danby's anti-French policy created a spirit of jealousy in Louis XIV, and he became a staunch enemy of Danby. He was impeached by the House of Commons due to Louis XIV. He saved his life anyhow, but his ministry came to an end. Now, the Popish Plot. At the same time, a rumor terrified the people of England along with the Parliament. In 1678, a person named Titus Oates, T-I-T-U-S-O-A-T-E-S, gave a statement before the magistrate of London, in which he told that a plot was being conceived by the Pope to murder the King Charles II and to enthrone James II in his place. The magistrate was also murdered after some time of this event. It led the people of England to believe that such a plot was on, and the Parliament also accepted it, though it was a baseless notion. The members of the opposite party in the Parliament wanted to take advantage of this situation. They had an opinion that the Duke of Monmouth, the illegitimate son of Charles II, should be enthroned in place of James II. It alarmed the Protestants. Southgate remarks, "The king himself utterly disbelieved in the plot, and to his brother he made the uncomplimentary remark, 'They will never kill me to make you king.'" But the London mob was intensely excited. To the people there seemed nothing unreasonable in the revelations of Titus Oates. Roman Catholics were regarded as capable of any evil. Now, three short parliaments. After dissolution of the Cavalier Parliament in 1679, three short parliaments were invited within 2 years, 1679-81. The first parliament demanded imprisonment of Danby in the Tower, and it also passed the Habeas Corpus Act. According to it, no person was to be kept in prison for a long time without trial before the court of law for justice. But all the three short parliaments were bewildered at the question of James' accession to the throne of England. They subsequently proposed that Monmouth should be enthroned. They also proposed the Exclusion Bill before Charles II, which aimed at the cancellation of the right of James I to the throne of England, but Charles was not prepared to bow down at any cost. He declared, "I will never yield and I will not be intimidated. I have reason and law in my favor. Well-minded people are on my side." Political parties were formed in England on the basis of Exclusion Bill. At first, they were called petitioners, those who were in favor of inviting Parliament and this proposal, and abhorrers, those who did not want to restrict the privileges of Charles II and were against this proposal. Later on, they came to be known as Whigs and Tories, W-H-I-G-S. And T-O-R-I-E-S. The power of Charles II had increased in 1681. The petitioners were defamed. The secret of the intrigue of Pope was disclosed. And poor innocent Lord Stafford was awarded death punishment. Lord Shaftesbury and Monmouth were exiled from the country. Now, Rye House Plot, R-Y-E, House Plot. In 1683, a plot was made against the life of the king near Rye House, but it failed, and the leaders of this plot, Russell and Sidney, the famous Whig leaders, were given death punishment in 1683. After having crushed the party opposed to him, Charles II worked against the Test Act and reappointed his brother James II. He ruled from 1681 to 1684 without Parliament. He tried to exercise his influence in the new elections to impress the voters, but in the meantime he fell sick and passed away in 1685. Now, points to remember. Charles II was a man of cheerful and gay disposition. He was self-centered and shamelessly devoted to luxuries and pleasures. He did not appear to be uncordial with the Parliament, but nobody could know his internal feelings. Now, home policy of Charles II. First, convention and his deeds. Second, the Cavalier Parliament. First, Clarendon Code. Second, Corporation Act. Third, Conventicle Act. Fourth, 5 Miles Act. Now, 3. Cabal Ministry. First, Declaration of Indulgence. Second, Test Act. Now, 4. Danby's Ministry. Fifth, the Popish Plot. Sixth, 3 Short Parliaments. Seventh, Rye House Plot.